turn to the book of Genesis, chapter 21. Book of Genesis, chapter 21. We'll read verses 14 through verse 19. Genesis, chapter 21. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. And she went and set her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot. For she said, Let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, What aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. By way of background to what we've just read, when Abraham was 75 years old, we know that God promised him that he and Sarah would have a son. About 10 years passed, and we read over in Genesis chapter 16 and verse 1. Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children. And she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. Now, Sarah, Abram's wife, bare him no children. 10 years after the promise had been made. Sarah, of course, was well past childbearing years, and she came up with the idea that Hagar, their Egyptian maid, could be a surrogate mother. So Sarah encourages her husband Abraham to impregnate Sarah, or Hagar. We see this in Genesis 16, verses 2 and 3. And then we read in verse 4, And he went unto Hagar, and she conceived. From this conception came Ishmael. When Abraham was 86 years old. In Genesis 16 and verse 16, And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to him. So Abraham is now 86 years old. Once Hagar conceived, she began to despise Sarah. We see this also in verse 4. She began to despise her mistress. And though it was Sarah that came up with this wicked and sinful plan, when she saw that Hagar despised her, she blamed Abraham. We see in verse 5, And Sarah said unto Abraham, My wrong be upon thee. So she came up with the idea. She now blames Abraham. Abraham, in response, told Sarah that she had the authority to do with Hagar as she pleased. And we read in verse 6 that Sarah dealt hardly with her. That is, Sarah began to treat Hagar very harshly, very severely, very unkindly. As a result of this treatment, we are told in verse 6 that Hagar fled from her face. So Hagar leaves the tent. Hagar flees. And I'm sure that there was a great amount of anger, a great amount of bitterness, a great amount of hurt and disbelief at what had happened. Her entire household and her entire life, an entire household and lives have now been shaken and have now been disrupted because of sin. And sin will always do that. Sin will disrupt households. Sin will disrupt lives. That's not the point of the message. But as you read through chapter 16, we are told that the Lord appeared to Hagar and told her to return home and submit herself to Sarah. In other words, the Lord came to Hagar and said, Hagar, you need to do the right thing. No matter what Sarah has done, you need to do the right thing. Now, return home, submit yourself to Sarah. And then if we go back to Genesis 21, we are told in verse 2, for Sarah conceived. From this conception, of course, came Isaac. Abraham was now 100 years old. So we have 14 years between Genesis 16 at the birth of Ishmael and the birth of Isaac. Notice in verse 5 of Genesis 21, and Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. We read in verse 8, and the child grew, that is Isaac, and was weaned. And that would have occurred between the ages of 2 and 3. So Ishmael is between the ages of 16 and 17. And one day, Sarah sees him mocking Isaac. And she became infuriated and said to Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and send her son with her. Kick her out. I am tired of it. Get rid of her. And this, of course, was extremely grievous to Abraham. We're told in verse 11, and the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God instructed Abraham to do as Sarah said. That is, send Hagar and her son away. Again, all of this is a picture of the troublesome effect of sin. But that brings us to our text. God has now told Abraham to do what Sarah has said. Verse 14, and Abraham rose early in the morning. He took bread and a bottle of water, gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and the child, and sent her away. From this point to verse 19, we see Hagar and Ishmael in the wilderness of Beersheba. We again see the disastrous effects of sin. While in the wilderness of Beersheba, we read in verse 15, and the water, that is, that bottle of water that Abraham put on her shoulder, and the water was spent, in the bottle. That material water that would be used to sustain their lives was spent. It was gone. And that is our subject this morning, when the water is depleted. What we have here is a picture of desperate need as we look at Hagar. There was, first of all, a drastic change in her circumstances. Because of sin, things had been very tense in Abraham's tent. Now you can't even begin to imagine how tense things become in Abraham's tent. And this went on for many years. But things came to a head when Sarah told her husband, cast her out. Kick her out. Hagar and Ishmael, in verse 14, are told by Abraham to vacate the premises. They are expelled from the comforts, from the security and shelter that Abraham's tent provided. Even though it was very tense times in Abraham's tent, Abraham's tent did provide some security. Abraham's tent did provide some shelter and did provide some comfort for Hagar. So Hagar and Ishmael, we read in verse 14, and she departed. She departed. They left that day with all their future plans and future dreams shattered. Everything has been shattered. Hagar and Ishmael left that day really with nowhere to go, and really not knowing what they would do. And as she departed, she headed into uncertainty. They are now homeless, and they're pretty much broke. They have a bottle of water, and they have a loaf of bread. Again, we see the effects of sin. But oh, what an effect, as they departed from the house that day, what an effect this must have had upon Hagar and Ishmael. No doubt they felt anger. No doubt there was bitterness. No doubt there was a degree of resentment. No doubt they had felt betrayed by Abraham. No doubt they were hurt. No doubt they were experiencing a great loss as they left the tent that day. And I'm sure that Hagar is thinking, how could Abraham allow this to happen? Why is he doing this? Do I mean anything to him at all? He must not love me at all. And there is hurt. And there is humiliation as they departed the house that day, leaving everything that was familiar to them. There has been a drastic change in their lives. And we see that, as you read on, that Hagar and Ishmael find themselves in dire straits. They depart from the house, and we read in verse 14, and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. They wandered. That is, they just kind of meandered around. They roamed and they drifted and they strayed through that wilderness. They wandered in the wilderness without any direction, without any real purpose. They wandered in the wilderness to no avail, accomplishing nothing and really going nowhere. Look at them as they wander
through this desert. Mother and son wandering in the wilderness. From Abraham's tent to a dismal, grim, empty, and isolated wilderness. Hagar and Ishmael, they wandered through this wilderness. They wandered through this desert. And no doubt the hot sun is beating down upon them. And then we come to verse 15. And the water was spent in the bottle. That is, that water that was so vital to their existence was all used up. It was gone. That water that was so essential, if they were to continue on, was gone. The bottle was dry. They wandered in the wilderness. They wandered into the wilderness. They wandered in the wilderness until all their resources were gone. No doubt they are tired. No doubt they are very, very weary. They are utterly exhausted. They are physically, mentally, and emotionally drained. And as you picture them walking through that wilderness, I believe eventually their walking turned to staggering. Their walking turned to stumbling. And they just couldn't go on much further, and the water bottle was empty. Their mouths are parched with thirst. Perhaps their lips are beginning to crack. Perhaps their tongues are beginning to swell, and the water was spent in the bottle. There was plenty of hot sand, but no water. No water. As Hagar and Ishmael continue through the wilderness, there is really no relief in sight. They could look to the north. They could look to the south. They could look to the east and to the west, and all they would see was wilderness. All they would see would be desert. Hagar knew, she could see, that her son, again, he's between 16 and 17 at this time, she could see and she knew that he was dying, that it would not be much longer. And in an attempt to give him some relief from the hot sun, she laid him under one of the shrubs, we read there in verse 15. We read in verse 16 that she, not being able to bear the sight of her son dying, she went from that shrub where she laid him. And we read that she lifted up her voice and wept. So there she is. Her son is dying. The water was spent in the bottle. And you look at Hagar, and there's many things that we could say about Hagar. Many things that weren't right. But that's not the point of the message. But look at her there. She's a wreck. Her son is dying. She is dying. She's not really concerned about her own death, but she is concerned that her son is dying. And I believe she is in a state of panic. And she had come to a point in her wanderings in the wilderness where her determination to go on, it's gone. Her determination has been drained. There's no need to proceed any further. So she just lays him under one of the shrubs. She is distraught. She is overcome with emotion. She is absolutely at her wit's end. She is in a situation that she could not possibly fix. And
And she lifted up her voice and wept.
And if we were to listen in,
these are the sounds of heartbreak.
We don't know what she said.
She lifted up her voice and she wept.
These are the sounds of despondency.
These are the sounds of absolute helplessness.
The sounds of overwhelming grief.
The sounds of overwhelming sorrow. So there we see Hagar and Ishmael dying in the wilderness. But what we want to notice this morning is what God did for Hagar while she was in this condition. First of all, God got her attention. God got her attention. There are many ways in which God gets our attention. But God got her attention. There she sits. She's exhausted. She's parched with thirst. All she can see is the hot desert sand and death. She has more heartache and more hurt and more sorrow and grief than she can possibly handle. She has a heavier burden than she can carry. And the water that was so essential for her life and her son's life, that's gone. It's been depleted. The water bottle is dry. And on top of that, all of that, Hagar really was a nobody. And Hagar had absolutely nothing to offer. And there she sits, weeping. But we read in verse 17, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven. There she is, she's in a place of desolation. She's in a place of misery. She's in a place of despair. She's in a place of death. And all of a sudden, the voice of Almighty God broke through everything. And he speaks directly. He speaks directly to Hagar. Again, she had wandered until all the food and all the water was gone. She had wandered until all of her strength was gone. She had wandered until all of her hope was gone. And there she is. Abraham has no idea where Hagar is. But God never lost track. God never lost track of her. He never lost track of Ishmael. The Lord knew exactly where they were. He not only knew where they were, he knew the heart of Hagar. He knew all of her sorrows. He knew all of her wrongdoings. He knew all of her turmoil. He knew all of her trouble. And we read that God, the angel of God, called to Hagar out of heaven. And I believe he did so very tenderly and very compassionately. And he simply asked her a question. He said, "What aileth thee, Hagar? What is it, Hagar, that causes you all of this pain? What is it that causes you all of this sorrow and heartache?" I believe that God wanted her to tell him. Not that God didn't know, but Hagar needed to know. And the Bible does not record Hagar's answer. And perhaps Hagar gave a very lengthy answer. Certainly she could have. Oh, what a story she could have told. She could have told about Sarah's devilish scheme.
She could have told how that Sarah demanded her to be cast out of the house. And now, God, here I sit. Me and my son, we have no water. We have nothing to eat. And we're just waiting to die. But while she was in this condition, the voice of God came from heaven. The lesson here is this. When the material water is depleted, listen. Listen for God's voice. There are a lot of voices clamoring all about us. But listen for that one voice. Listen for the voice of God. When you find yourself in the position that Hagar was in, listen. Listen for the voice from heaven. Listen for that voice. And we go on and we see that God not only got her attention by calling her, God sought to comfort her and to assure her. There she sits. There's no relief in sight. The water bottle is empty. She has no power to change the situation. She's obviously overcome with fear because of what God said to her. There is a horror and a state of anxiety and dread that fills her soul because she just knew that her only son was going to die. But then came this voice from God, a voice that penetrated through everything, a voice that penetrated through everything that Hagar was going through. And after, no doubt, Hagar told her story in response to the question, "What aileth thee, Hagar?" God then said to her, "Fear not." And notice in verse 17, he says, "Fear not, for." Fear not, because. What follows again is the reason not to fear. And the reason not to fear is that very next word, God. Fear not, for God. And what God is doing now, he's got her attention. And now he seeks to assure her. Not because of what she's done, but in spite of what she has done. But he assures her by who he is, what he has promised, and what he will do. Fear not, for God. And then he instructed her. Again, when you find yourself in Hagar's place, listen. Listen for God. Whatever assurance there is in your situation, it'll be in God. It will be nowhere else, it'll be in God. Fear not, for God. But then he gave her instruction. He told her to do something. Again, she's sitting there. She just knows that Ishmael is going to die. And God says to her, "Arise. Arise. Sarah, get up. Get up. Walk over to your son. Lift him up." And then we have, "For I." He gave her instruction. The instruction was based upon what God would do. And then God did something to Hagar and for her that would lead to her relief and would lead to her rescue. In verse 19, "And God opened her eyes."
And God opened her eyes. I believe this reveals the biggest problem that Hagar had at this time. Hagar has many problems. She has many troubles. But the truth is, the fact that she had been cast out, the fact that she had been sent away, really wasn't her biggest problem. Really wasn't her biggest trouble. The fact that she was in a wilderness, surrounded by helplessness and hopelessness, that really wasn't her biggest problem. You see, the biggest problem that Hagar had at this time was not that she and her son were dying of thirst and that the water bottle was dry. Oh, those are problems. Those are troubles. But that's not the biggest problem. And that's not the greatest trouble. All of these things, of course, were great sources of trouble. But they were not her biggest problem. Her greatest trouble is discovered from what God did to her and for her. And God opened her eyes. Her biggest problem and her greatest source of trouble was that she could not see God's provision. That caused her more trouble than anything else. We see, as a result of what God did, we read, and she saw a well of water. She did not see that well of water until God opened her eyes. It's not as if God just dropped down a well of water there. The well was already there. And Hagar could not see it until God opened her eyes. And when God opened her eyes, she saw a well of water. There in that hot desert, right where she was, there was a well of God's providing. And that is always so. Right where we are, there is a well of God's providing. There is a well in the Word of God. Wherever you are, God's Word is the same, and it is a well of God's providing. There is a well provided in the person of God. But there is a well of God's providing. And in that well was what Hagar and Ishmael so desperately needed. Within their very reach was what they needed. And you see, God had already made provision in the desert. Before Hagar even got there, God had already made provision. God in His grace, God in His mercy, had already prepared for Hagar what she needed. Again, the well was there before they got there. And that is true of you and I as well. And while Hagar was drawing her breath in agony, and while Ishmael was struggling for his very life, and while Hagar's heart was breaking, while all that was going on, God had already provided the remedy that they so desperately needed. You don't have to provide the remedy. God already has. What we need is to have our eyes opened, that we can see the well of God's providing. Now, while Hagar was going through this time of tragedy, this time of calamity, this affliction, this adversity, there were resources already supplied by God. I believe the lesson here is for you and I that it's not the trial that's our biggest problem. It's not the difficulty that's our biggest problem. It's not even the desert. It's not the storm that we're going through. Our biggest and most pressing problem is when we cannot see God's provision. When we cannot see God's remedy for our life. I mean, Hagar could see that they were lost in the wilderness. Hagar could look around and she could see the sand everywhere. Hagar could tip up that bottle and see that all the water was gone. She could shake it and see that nothing came out. All the water was gone. She could see all of those things. And she could look over and see her son. And there he is, dying. She could see all of this. But the one thing that she needed to see, she did not see until God opened her eyes. Because you see, that well changes everything. That well is the remedy. That well is the solution for a dry bottle. That well is a solution for thirst. But she couldn't see it. And oh, how many times people say, oh, only if this didn't happen to me. That's not your biggest problem, my friend. Your biggest problem is when you can't see what God has put right in front of you. And we all get there. We all get there where all we can see is what we think is our problem. And we're not diminishing Hagar's troubles one iota. But all of the things she was experiencing, her biggest problem was that she did not see God's provision. Until God opened her eyes, and we read, God opened her eyes, she saw. That is, as a result of God opening her eyes, she saw a well of water. Remember, God has told her to arise. She's standing up. And as a result of seeing that well of water, we read that she went and filled the bottle with water. She went and filled the bottle with water. And then she then gave it to Ishmael to drink. Whatever, wherever you are today, there is a well of God's providing at hand. Whatever it is that pains you. And we all have many things that pain us. Whether they be legitimate things or not really isn't important right now. We all have things that pain us. We all have things that trouble us. We all have things that afflict us and that grieve us deeply. But there is a well near at hand. God has provided a well wherever it is that you are. And in that well is everything that you need. And what you need to do is you need to rise. You need to see the well. And then seeing the well, you need to go over to the well. You need to take that empty bottle and you need to fill it. And you need to drink. And that changes everything. That changes everything. Now, we do not read that God opened her eyes and Hagar saw the well and she sat there and just went over and over and rehashed, oh, why did Abraham do this to me? Why did he cast me out? Why is Sarah so mean? Why is all of this happening? No. Once she saw the well, she went over to the well.
You are a fool. If God opens your eyes and you see the well and you sit there and continue to feel sorry for yourself. Common sense. If I'm dying of thirst and all of a sudden God shows me water, common sense is I'm going to make my way to that water. Whatever I have to do, I'm getting to that water. And that's what Hagar did.
God has a well. And in that well is the life that we need. In that well is the strength and the comfort that we need. In that well is the peace that we need. In that well is the assurance that you need. In that well is what will satisfy your soul. In that well is what will encourage you. In that well is what will rejuvenate you. So arise and take that dry, empty water bottle and fill it up. And then drink. And after they drank, they went on. Now, it is true. Hagar is in this position because of sin. They disobeyed God's order. And now their life is a mess. And there they are. But even in those times, there is a well of God's providing. You may have wrecked your life. You may have brought much pain and agony in your life, but I'm telling you today, there is a well. There is a well of God's providing. That well may not change what you've done. It may not change, it may not take away the scars, but you will find in that well that which will satisfy your soul. You will find in that well that which will strengthen and rejuvenate you. You'll find it in that well. You won't find it anywhere else. But you'll find it in that well. I'm so thankful. You look at your life, you go back and look upon your life, and there's well after well after well of God's providing. How many times God has provided that well? He's opened our eyes. He caused us to see. And He gave us the strength to walk over to the well and fill that empty bottle up. And we found spiritual rejuvenation. We found assurance. We found satisfaction. Whatever your need is today, whatever it is, there is a well near at hand. And that is a well of God's providing. And in that well is everything you need. Isaiah 12 and verse 3 speaks of drawing with joy out of the wells of salvation. They're always there. We're surrounded by them. And all we need to drink of that well. And would we not be foolish? If God has provided a well, then I'm pretty foolish if I go drink out of the rivers of this world. And that's what many folks are doing today. They're thirsty. They're dissatisfied. And they go looking for the rivers of this world. Those rivers won't quench your thirst. But there is some thirst-quenching waters in the wells of God's providing. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song. Let's all